Welcome to the Vegan Report. My name is Ryan, and let me ask you this. What if you could harness the God powers of AI to convince the world of going vegan? What if every time someone showed skepticism towards veganism, you would know, thanks to AI, just the right thing to say to inspire them to respond to their skepticism? That is the ambitious goal today's guest, Ben Messiah, is pursuing. He is training ChatGPT to become the perfect vegan activist, and he shares with us the surprising insights he got from doing that. Try vegan activist ChatGPT now. It's really fun. Link in the episode notes. So, Ben, welcome to the show. Thank you so much for being here.
Thanks for having me.
Yes. I wanted to start with something that has been on my mind for a while now, and which is the different words we use to describe people in this animal rights movement. So think about plant-based, vegan, animal rights activist, animal liberation activist. And I kind of feel confused by all of those words. And I also wonder, you know, what qualifies someone as an activist? Because I was thinking, am I an activist? Like, I do this podcast, I do some other things on the site, but when I think about animal rights activists, I think about you. I think about Natalie Bartosek, who is a guest of the show. I think of people who are on the ground protesting, you know, entering factory farms, doing that kind of on the ground work. Or maybe the lawyers, you know, who are going against some big animal exploitation corporation. So give me your insight about all of this.
Yeah, I mean, so personally, I like to call myself a vegan activist. You know, veganism, in my view, is very clearly defined. You know, the objective of the movement is very clearly defined. And for me, like, that, in my opinion, is the easiest form of, like, street outreach that doesn't require lots of, like, knowledge or you know, background or, you know, understanding of statistics or whatever. Like, anybody can go and do vegan outreach. But for me, I think, like, anybody who is active in any way possible is an activist, right? So even if you're, you know, maybe you're not cut out for going on the street, and everybody is, and so I'm not going to expect everybody to go out on the street, you know, but there's so many different things, like you're saying, behind the scenes, you know, even if it's just with your friends, even if it's in your normal day, you know, and somebody starts talking or making fun of, like, a joke, and you know that there's, like, an animal kind of, like, exploitative language to that joke, and you kind of correct them, right? That's an activist, right? So somebody who is willing to, like, say what nobody is wanting to say, kind of thing, right? So you're not stopping yourself from, oh, like, you know, I don't want to say this right now because, you know, it might bring up, and there probably is certain times where you do just choose to keep your mouth shut, but you have probably more context of situation than the people, so you know it's not worth it, right? But an activist has that kind of, like, fire every time they hear or they see, they want to say something or do something, right? So I don't think that, you know, you should not, like, or you should feel bad about yourself because you're not on the street or, like, something like that. Like, you have a podcast. I think that's awesome, right? And one thing I think that the space needs more of is education, right? And so, like, even if you're just an educator, you're teaching people or making content, like, that's huge. And I think it goes a long way for the animals. So,
what about, you know, do you think that vegans in general are by default activists? So I feel like we're always, as vegans, even if our intention is not to be an activist, we found ourselves in those situations with family, with friends, in the workplace, where we need to defend animals and
Yeah.
talk about veganism or
Yeah.
animal rights. Do you feel it's a default position anyway?
Yeah. So if like for and the word is specifically they're vegan, right? If somebody's plant-based, I don't consider them an activist. They might not be, vegan per se, because they might still wear leather or something like that. Even if they're like an ethical plant-based, and no animal products or anything like that, some of those people are still maybe speciesist in certain ways, or there's still some supremacy there. They're still like, okay, well, if there was like a really nice way for me to exploit animals in the future, I will. Right now, there aren't really any. So, also like I don't really want to like say that someone is or isn't vegan. Like, I'm not gonna like call tell somebody, oh, like you're not actual vegan. I think most people like genuinely want to be, or think they are, or something like that. And so, for me, it's more about, inspiring the mindset, the belief. But what was the original question again? I think I veered off a little.
It's okay. It happens all the time.
Yeah.
It was about how just being vegan
Oh,
puts you in the position of, yeah.
yeah, exactly. So like, just being vegan, like with when you look at like any of the principles behind them, right, there is like a level of rejecting, right? So the rejecting is an action that comes from that principle. And so to me, part of being vegan means that you need to be active, because the reason you're a vegan, because you see this injustice, right? And when you see this injustice, how do you stay silent? Like, right? So if you haven't seen the injustice and you're just eating a plant-based diet, like, of course, how are you going to be active? How are you going to be saying something about it, right? And that's, I think, the difference. I mean, not think. I know that's what the difference, and there's lots of people out there who say they're vegan who I probably wouldn't consider vegan, but I think those people are, easy to reach in terms of like getting them to that point. And so, a little bit of focus needs to be put there. A little bit of focus needs to be put in education. A little bit of focus needs to be put in outreach with non-vegans. A little bit of focus needs to be put, everywhere. And I think there's lots of people who are, targeting each area and with expertise. So.
And what do you make of the idea that every vegan is an ambassador of the cause? How many times, I stopped counting how many times people have told me, I like how you are as a vegan. Like, you're different from the other vegans. And I'm just wondering what other vegans they must have, they must have watched something on social media with some crazy lunatic vegan, or some memes about it, or maybe something that someone described, an anti-vegan, how they describe
Yeah.
vegans. Like, I'm put against that image of a crazy lunatic vegan, an extreme vegan, and I'm always being told, like, you're normal. And that's like, if it was some kind of surprise, or express their shock, like, you're a normal vegan, how come?
Well, there's this bias in society, right? And it's like there people want to have their beliefs, confirmed, right? And so it's like the thing where, a sports player will get injured, right? And it just happens. It's normal, right? But that sports player happens to be vegan and gets injured, right? It's because he's vegan, right? And so vegans are singled out because we're part of this out group. Right, because we're still a minority. And so there's the in group and then the out group, right? And so the people in the out group, when anything happens in there, it's because they're part of the out group, right? But if you're in the in group, it's like, oh, it's just normal, whatever. Like nobody questions it, nobody cares to ever think about it, right? And so, as vegans, like to me, like veganism is not a personality, it's not an identity, it's not a lifestyle or anything, right? Just as much as like me being against, rape, or something, you know, any other injustice. Like, that's not who I am, right? Like, we're so much deeper than that. We're so much more profound. Like, all of us still have, you know, different music tastes, or, you know, we do different things, or we work different jobs, or, you know. So how do you, like, you know, like, group all of us in one category like that? Like, it's impossible, you know. So, but when it comes to being ambassadors, like, I think, like, we as vegans don't actually do enough. And it's one of the things that, you know, I've been talking about a lot lately, is the what is the difference between the animal rights and the vegan movement, right? And so a lot of people that I ask, they just think that they're synonymous with each other. Like, veganism means animal rights, and animal rights means veganism, right? And I'm like, because I'm a data guy, like, I always like to overanalyze things, and I'm in my head a lot, and I'm thinking, and I'm doing research. And so when I actually, like, went vegan, I started learning about activism. I was watching all these activists and on YouTube and everything, and I just kind of, like, never really put much thought into it. Like, these guys have been vegan forever, and they got millions of followers, and they're doing this stuff. So, like, what they're doing must work. And so I just kind of, like, adopted it and never really asked any questions. And when I started realizing and started actually, like, critically thinking, and I actually, like, had a burnout period, and so that's where I was starting to do all of this reflecting. But I was like, okay, well, when we're talking about animal rights, like, what is a rights violation, right? And so if I'm walking down, you know, the side of the road, and I see an abandoned egg there, and I happen to take it and eat it, is there a rights violation? I don't know. This is, like, really, you know, unclear to me now. Or if I see a feather and I use that, is that a rights violation, right? Well, what if I step on an ant when I'm walking? I'm technically violating the rights of that ant. And I was like, you know, okay, so, like, I'm trying to, like, now find some kind of information, like, what is animal rights and what isn't animal rights. And so then I was, like, lost in this, like, legal framework versus moral framework. Which kind of rights are you fighting for? And it's like, well, when you go back to, like, slavery and how that was human slavery and how that was abolished, or mostly abolished, first there was, like, you know, people that had to actually convince everybody that, you know, black people were human, right? And that, you know, this is wrong. And so once you had enough of those people, then you're able to go to, like, the law and actually start, like, fighting for laws and doing all this more legal battle, right? But you needed to have that foundation, and we're still not really there in that stage, I think, with this movement. So, like, the difference to me between vegan activism and animal rights activism is that we're trying to get this mindset shift as vegans, to get people to just recognize that animals are individuals, right? That they're just like you and I, right? Not necessarily equal, but we're all the same, as in we're all unique, right? We all have our own subjective experience. We all want to live. We all want to be happy, right? And so getting enough people to recognize animals as individuals and not commodities and objects, right, creates the potential for this shift, right? And then what happens with that is, you know, you start to get more people, and then you start to hit this point where now it's, like, getting to this critical mass, and then the movement starts to grow exponentially, right? Because this mindset shift is something that's very simple, is very easy. It doesn't take, you know, a lot of debating and statistics or anything to really get people to make that connection. It's like, hey, look, like, you know, and you can target people who actually have more empathy, and you can vet them and make sure that you're qualifying them to make sure, okay, this person I'm talking to is not a psychopath, right? And they seem to actually care about animals. And if they have a little bit of that, then you can have the conversation. It's really easy to have, and, you know, you're not wasting your time. So that's vegan activism to me. And then you go into animal rights, and it's like, okay, there, you know, again, now there's, like, this cloudy area. I mean, Tom Reagan was, I think, the person who, you know, coined the term or founded this. And, you know, his stuff is really amazing, and I like listening to it. But I still just get confused. I don't know. So when I'm doing animal rights activism, isn't I trying to say, like, you know, do animals deserve the right to freedom? Do they deserve the right to this? Which rights am I trying to fight for? How do I try and convince people that they deserve rights? Or am I not talking to people, and am I going? So This is something that to me is very confusing still. It's not very clear, and not that it's not important, but for me, I like to call myself a vegan activist, and I think there's a stigma around the word vegan too, and I think that that's why people might go and resort to calling themselves animal rights activists, because they don't want to apply that stigma to what they do. And this is where I mean, as ambassadors, I think we should be doing more, right? If we're not even willing to represent the right movement in our activism and understand what the movement is about, and how would other people take it seriously, right? So if we don't take the movement seriously, like, I don't think anybody else will. And as vegan activists, it's our job, one, to get people to connect with the animals and make that realization, but also to let people know what veganism actually is, right? So even if there's an outreach conversation on the street and you get that person walking away just realizing that veganism is not a diet, I think that is, like, huge, right? So yeah, as activists, I think we need to better represent that.
You said earlier that the whole thing about being an ambassador, we're not doing enough of that. What did you mean by that? And how can we be vegan ambassadors?
Yeah, I think, like, we have to. I don't want to use the word pride because I don't think pride is the right word, but we really have to have the conviction, right, that this is the right thing to do, right? And I think most vegans have that internally, but it's still being suppressed because of societal pressures, right? I mean, I know a lot of people who, fit under the whole ethical side and, are definitely vegan for the right reasons, but when they go out or when they're with friends or at work, they don't even want to say that they're vegan. Right? And, I can relate, like, I can empathize with them, but, it doesn't help when, somebody all of a sudden learns that, oh, this person's vegan, and it's like, oh, why didn't you want to tell me? Or some other conclusions are drawn up, and it's like, you don't have to go out there, wear a big vegan t-shirt and just constantly be, loud. But, like, if you're embarrassed that you're vegan, right? Like what inside of you is really getting you to that point, right? And so as ambassadors, it's our job to, like I said, explain what veganism is, just as simply as you can, right? Leslie Cross, as we're going to probably talk about soon here, in his speech, he said that, veganism is the doctrine that man should live without exploiting animals. And he asked everybody to just memorize that line so that whenever somebody hears the word vegan, we're all on the same page. Right. And it's super simple. It's six words, right? And anybody can memorize it. And, that is, I think, one of our biggest roles is, like, okay, just tell someone you're vegan. And all you have to do is say why. It's like, oh, well, I don't think we should be exploiting animals. Right. And if you even say that, if you can represent veganism in that way, however you want to word it, like, I don't want to be a vegan police. Like, I think everybody should. Stick to that simplified definition. And I have my reasons, but again, I can't control non-vegans. Why would I want to control vegans, right? But yeah, I think as ambassadors, it's our role to reject exploitation, reject the mindset anywhere that we see it, as long as we have the ability and are able to do that.
I see that, everything you just said applies to me in the workplace. I feel like I had that influence at every job I had in the past decade. Like, I found myself influencing choices of, human resources, of organizing, going to a restaurant or for birthdays. Now they're, choosing vegan cakes or, choosing at least restaurants with vegan options. And that conversation, I had that conversation so many times with colleagues of, why are you vegan? Why did you decide to become vegan? All the usual questions. I feel like this is my battleground as a vegan ambassador, the workplace. And we often forget about the corporate setting and how much influence we can have on our organizations, our employers.
And like they're online, like there's a lot of trolls, and most people are so exposed to that. And if you're on doing activism and you're on the street, like there's a lot of trolls too, and so we might like over assume that everybody is like that, right? But when it comes to our friends and our families, like, and people who are close to us, like, they care about us. And like, for me, like, if I told my family and most of my friends that, like, I won't go for dinner if you're not going to be eating vegan in front of me, like, I mean, like, I just like in a respectful way, and they all respect me, so they won't, eat dead animals around me, or they won't, want to take me to places that are going to be like a zoo or something, right? So, and my background is Lebanese, and so like we can go to a Lebanese restaurant, there's so many vegan options, right? And so if you have that fear, like there's probably something else that needs to be addressed too, right? Like these are simple conversations, they're easy, and all you're really asking for is respect. Like, if you respect me, like why, or if you don't respect me, why do you want to be my friend anyways, right? Or in workspace too, is you have to be respectful and professional, and everybody should be at least heard, and that kind of thing. And so yeah, it's a good place, and creates lots of opportunities for these conversations. And yeah, if you have the means and the ability to, then yeah, I think there's an obligation there.
And talking about those conversations, we're not all great communicators like yourself. And so you created a tool for us, an AI tool called Vegan Activist GPT, which allows you to basically, take copy a comment you receive, or I guess input that comment into the AI chat and get a response from the AI telling you basically what to respond in order to convince that person of going vegan. Now, the first time I heard about this tool, I was just, amazed. Like, that's so great. Like, that's exactly what I like to hear in the, in terms of activism. I want to see innovation, and I want to see intelligence, and that's everything I want to see. Okay, how did you came up with that idea? And what was the process of building a vegan activist GPT? Like, for me who has no like programmer skill, this is like beyond my skills. So tell us about that.
So, I mean, yeah, my background is in coding, and I went to school for computer science, and then I went to digital media, and then I actually graduated from video game design. So, I'd built characters before. I know kind of what goes into that, and I always kind of liked modeling and designing characters and 3D art and that kind of stuff. And that's my background. So my background is not in communication. English is my third language, and I failed. I pretty much failed English every year in school. I was like the math guy, numbers guy. I think I got like a 57% in English class in like grade 12, and I barely got me into university with that, like late accepted. And then I failed English in university. So, I'm not a good communicator, right? So that was the first part of me wanting to create this, because I actually, when I became vegan, and maybe a little bit before that too, I started just realizing, like, I used to be very careless, and I've grown a lot. And I used to say, like, oh, if somebody doesn't understand me, that's their problem, right? And then I realized, why am I saying that? Like, why do I want it to even be living in that reality, right? Like I could just easily learn how to be a better communicator and communicate effectively. And so I actually like took a really big step to, be more just mindful of what I'm saying, be more intentional about what I'm saying, and put more care and thought into it. And I think that was like a good foundation for that. And so, when it came to tying this all to veganism, when I first started my activism, we didn't have any flow charts or frameworks. It was more just like watch YouTube and try and remember what they're saying and doing what they're doing and just go out there and it's like a free for all. And I remember the first time getting the flow chart for AAV, I was like, oh my God, this is like the Holy Grail right now. Like, this is so genius. And I just like wrote it in my phone right away and I just kept like memorizing and reading it. And even for the first conversations, I would like have my phone with me and I would just like read off the questions and it started to really click for me and realize how powerful that was. And sharing that with all the other activists in my chapter, like it was huge for them too, because now we had structure. Now we had something that you can actually teach, right? And so people can make sense of what to say, how to say it, and how to be effective. And I took that and I started to like, really cherish it and also wanted to make it better. And fast forward to, when ChatGPT came out, like it's almost been 2 years, I think, or over 2 years ago now. Being a guy in tech, I've always like been excited about this kind of stuff. And so when ChatGPT came out, I was like one of the first people. I had my sign up and I got access, and I was just like asking it everything. And lots of activism I was just learning or researching I was doing through ChatGPT. And sometimes I would ask like, what's the best way to say this, or what's the best way to say that, or how's it a different way I can say this. And so I started using it to like help me say what I wanted to say. So I still had to be the one prompting it with what I want it to tell me or what I want it to output so that I can say that. And that was actually teaching me so much. And so that was number one, the most powerful tool. And then after I started posting on social media, one of my videos just like started, it didn't even really go that viral, but I woke up one night and I had like over 150 comments on this video. And I was like, what the heck? Like, now I'm like shaking. When you're like first getting into like posting online and you get all the trolls and you're kind of like, you don't know how to, you're just so anxious. And it's kind of like, you're like, how am I going to answer all these people? But can't like not answer all these people. And so I started like, going into ChatGPT and I started like writing, okay, I wrote this video. This is what I was saying in the video, and I want you to like help me respond to the comments, so that like I don't have to write and type and spend like probably 3 days worth to answer all these comments. So I gave ChatGPT the context of what my video was about, and then I would just like paste, copy and paste the comments, and it would generate the responses. And it was really good. I mean, it didn't really represent like the stance properly and how I would have responded, because it was pulling all this information from the internet and there's lots of information out there. And so then I was like, okay, like this is kind of working but not really. So then I spent like maybe like another hour really getting it to like train it on what kind of responses I want. And then I it was like a flow. So then I actually like was able, once that was ready, answer like over 150 comments within like maybe 30 or 40 minutes. And then, that was just like using ChatGPT normally. And I was like, okay, I don't want to have to like set up the environment like this every time, right? One of my videos goes viral. And so I started programming like a custom GPT so that way I am giving it all the instructions. I'm giving it like examples. I'm giving it frameworks. I'm uploading documentation. I'm writing documentation so that I can feed to it, so that it can handle different topics and it can learn all these different things. And so from that post of like getting 150 comments and being overwhelmed and not knowing how I was going to answer them all, essentially birthed this idea that eventually turned into the vegan activist GPT. So.
And how many people have used that to date?
Actually, I can actually see if I go to the let's go take a look. Last I checked, so it doesn't show how many people, but it shows that there's been over 1,000 conversations that have been started with it. So the numbers usually go from I think 1,000 to 10,000. So at 10,000, it'll start showing that I've had more than 10,000. So it's somewhere actually between maybe 1,000 and 10,000. But I have been getting lots of messages from people who are using it, who are just, raving about it because it's so like needed in the space, right? So whether you're using it for, responding to comments or just getting information or learning about how to, address certain arguments, or you can actually use it to help you make content. You can use it to, you do all these other things. And I've uploaded a lot of documentation into there where, if you want to go into like more nitty-gritty stuff about veganism, I've uploaded like the foundational frameworks and the speeches and all that stuff. I've written stuff about moral frameworks, about deontological frameworks, utilitarian frameworks. And so, it goes pretty in depth on all these things. And if anybody is watching this, like my favorite prompt to use on any educational topic with any GPT is, I want you to quiz me on this topic, right? And then quiz me one question at a time. And so let's say you want to learn about utilitarianism, right? Go to the chat GPT and be like, I want you to quiz me on the moral framework of utilitarianism, right? If you don't really understand what it is, boom, it'll start asking you questions. If you get it wrong, it'll start to teach you, okay, this is, the right answer and this is why. And so then you're actually able to build this knowledge base in like this like very fun and interactive way, rather than like reading like blocks and blocks and not really knowing, right? And then let's say you don't really understand a question, then you can ask it more. So that's one piece of advice, I want to leave everybody with, especially if you're using my GPT and anything you want to learn about veganism. Like, even if you're not vegan, say like, hey, quiz me on why people go vegan, or what, the common reasons, or what is the history of this, right? Good way to learn things.
I love it. I love, let's harness the power of AI for animals. And this is revealing because this would not be possible if there was no pattern in the questions and answers, the conversations around veganism and animal rights. I always hear the same things, when I ask, why are you not vegan? It's always the same concerns. It's always the same silly arguments about plants having feelings. And how interesting that it comes from everyone. Like, there is no difference of culture, whether you are a college graduate or someone who is working class. You think plants have feelings, and that you need a protein intake that a plant-based diet will not give you, and all of those, same false ideas. How do you explain that? Because sometimes I feel like we all went to anti-vegan school, and we got brainwashed with the same thought patterns. And like, when did that brainwashing happen? Like, what's going on
It's
with this?
actually, I'm gonna answer this question in a way that probably no one is ever gonna answer this ever again. But when I was programming this GPT, the thing is it pulls from the internet a lot, right? And so a lot of content out there on veganism is about the environment. A lot of it is about health, and a lot of it is about reducing harm and suffering and all these things. Things that I don't relate with, and I know that the movement's not really about, but it's kind of been conflated in that way. So I had to sit and like think of a way to like just like say, hey, never ever go into these realms. Even though I would type in these instructions, because it still can go into the internet, it would always like come up with the randomest things sometimes. And like, okay, this is not right. So I actually had to tackle the root. So if I was to now program a GPT that I never actually used the word vegan in, and I'm more just explaining principles, and I'm more giving it more of a framework, like an abstract framework, rather than using the word, because then if I use the word, then it's going to go to the internet, pull up information around that word, and start bringing that in. And so what that actually led me to do was I actually defined a whole new word by accident. And so I have this word, I have so much documentation on it that I might publish this in the future. But ultimately, this word is the ultimate definition of this state that you're talking about. And the best way to define it is essentially it's a conditioned systemic obsession with controlling and dominating other animals, right? And so that's what the root is. And this is what's been pushed onto us. And it goes as deep as like language and idioms and, marketing and conditioning and tradition and all these things, right? And ultimately, what veganism seeks to do is dismantle that. So the new version of the activist AI that I'm building right now, is trained fully on this word and identifying where in everyone's arguments that happens to be present and addressing that, right? So it's not going into facts, it's not going into talking about the I what generic people would answer to all the questions, but it goes directly into the root. So it identifies why is this person asking this? Where is this obsession coming from? Where is this mania coming from? And how do I dismantle it? And this is like the powerful thing. Like, I'm actually so excited to be launching that one when it's ready. I have a couple of friends who are constantly like using it and sending me, their chat history so I can kind of analyze it and maybe tweak some of the instructions. But yeah, there is this root that is behind all of these questions, like you say. And I mean, it's verifiable. I know it. The GPT has come up with with that on its own in a sense. And yeah, it's just everywhere around us, everywhere in society. And because it's like I was talking about before, the in-group, because everybody in that in-group wants to like be, confirming their bias, it's just going to keep getting worse and worse. And it's up to us to break out and find those people who are actually just ready to break out like we were and come onto our side.
Now I just want to know the word. What is it?
Maybe I'll tell you after. I'll tell you after we're done.
Yes, because it's truly fascinating, and I think you have your finger on something. Like,
Yeah.
I guess, what about the other words? Speciesism, anthropocentrism. What about all of
Yeah.
those other words? Where are their limitations?
Yeah. I mean, like, again, when I heard all these words, like, yeah, they seem like so perfect. Carnism, speciesism, human supremacy, right? And I don't want to say they're bad words, but they're not the full scope. Like, they don't encapsulate the whole problem, right? Because even a vegan, can technically be speciesist, right? And I can tell you the reasons, and I will, but one of the things that I love about the GPT is I can enter into debates with it to like help me break apart my own arguments, right? So, I have, okay, what's the harm in using the word speciesism versus the benefits versus of using it, right? And then I can challenge it, and it actually like gives me such good insights, right? And so a lot of my stance has been developed through teaching this how to perfectly represent veganism, perfectly represent what the opposite of veganism is, and then learn from it, right? And so, speciesism, for example, is it possible to be vegan and speciesist, right? So, ultimately, if species or if veganism is about dismantling this obsession that we have with controlling and dominating animals for our own uses, right? I could still see one animal as more inherently valuable than another animal, right? I could still recognize that maybe they're not even individuals, right? Maybe, but I don't want to harm them, or I don't want to exploit them, so right? Or maybe, like, when it comes to like certain levels of, maybe people like, for me, I think sentience is just like a all or nothing. I don't want to really debate that. It's my opinion or position. And so when you're talking about sentience on like a scale, right? Like, where do you draw the line of like, okay, this amount of sentience means like treating this way or with that, or right? So like there could be like, and these are all really, really edge case kind of scenarios. But I think that it is really important to understand when we use these words that they aren't perfect, perfectly representing what it is that veganism is fighting against, right? Human supremacy, again, people can still think humans are superior, right? And people can even think humans are superior in ways that are good ways, right? Because we are superior, it's our responsibility to take care of, others who are weaker or more innocent, right? And so, like, there's human supremacy like that we use, making it look like white supremacy, which is a bad thing, but it could also be like a, I mean, religions and ancient texts do talk about these things, how, we are superior, but we were given this right to steward the other animals because of that superiority, right? So I started not really liking those words. And then with carnism, right? Carne comes from the word meat, which meat just means like, if I'm talking about carnism, I'm talking about food. And so then people think that I'm talking about a diet, and I don't want to be talking about a diet. So, realizing all these words, the meanings, and you have to like understand how people are receptive to the words that you're using, right? If I know a word to mean one thing, but when I'm using it, everybody thinks I'm talking about something else, like I'm talking because I'm trying to be getting through to them, right? I'm not trying to, talk to just try and get them to like use the words I'm using necessarily, right? So if we're using the word cruelty, for example, like everybody is convinced that the food that they're eating or the clothes that they're wearing comes cruelty free, right? So to them, cruelty just means like, oh yeah, it was humane, or it was, whatever. And so if we're talking about being anti-cruelty, everybody technically is anti-cruelty, and everybody already is convinced that they are anti-cruelty, and you can't really convince them otherwise, right? And so, yeah, a lot of these words have so much deeper meaning, and words are so important. And like, I can't stress that enough. And when we are doing activism, when we are ambassadors for this movement, I think like all of us need to sit and critically think, like, okay, remove the ego, remove the arrogance, and put all that stuff aside. And really, if you're vegan and you're vegan for the right reason, you're doing this for the emancipation of animals. And these small changes add up so much, right? And we owe it to them, right? And if we're not going to do it, who else is, right? So I think all of us really need to like put this, there's a lot of fighting and stuff going on inside, and I don't want to be a part of that. I don't want to be fighting with other activists, right? And so I'm not really going out there and trying to like argue with people that they should use this word or that word, but I'm posting content that's kind of showing and highlighting the differences, or the pros and the cons, and or just even saying why. And a lot of people are pushing back, and a lot of people are sending me messages being like, holy smokes, like I get it. Like this makes so much sense, and I've been using this, and it's night and day, right? I haven't had anybody who's sent me a message yet saying like, hey Ben, like I tried to use this and it sucks. Like I couldn't, or this, blah blah. And some people have said that they've struggled with it, and I've helped them like understand, and I've taught them really like, because you're framing it from a new perspective, right? So you're not really going into the conversations expecting a debate. You're going into the conversation just getting them to make this connection, right? You're controlling the conversation. It's a really easy conversation to have. And you know, anytime there's a deflection, you can easily just bring it back to like the justice at the injustice at hand, right? And so yeah, I'm really passionate about words, and it's all kind of like come from, you know, just my passion for this, for the animals and their freedom. So
And I absolutely love that, and I understand where you're coming from because, you know, I know some vegans who are deeply Christian,
yeah.
and they make sense and frame their veganism through the scope of their Christian beliefs. And that's a whole different conceptual framework than your average secular vegan. And I think the average vegan out there does not get that. Same could be said about Buddhism. You know, if you know, I made an episode with Dharma Voices for Animals and
Yeah.
another one with Bhikkhu Sonyo, who is a vegan monk. If you want to talk about veganism from a Buddhist perspective, this is a whole different, again, ball game than, you know, the usual conversation we hear about veganism. So I completely understand that, and I think that you'll get lots of sympathy from at least, you know, vegans who are religious or at least justify their
Yeah.
veganism because of their religiosity or
Yeah.
spirituality.
You know, there's something here because my parents are both Christian Catholic. And when I went vegan, you know, I was talking to them a lot about it. And my mom and I, like, we our religious views are different, right? I have my own views, and I don't want to say religion, like I don't subscribe to a religion, but I definitely, like, you know, have my view. And so eventually, like, you know, I started realizing that for me to talk to my mom on the topic, I have to talk to her in her language, right? And so her language is the Bible, like she lives by it. And so I started just reading the Bible, and you know, from like the first page, like this was like almost 5 years ago now. Like on the front page, it starts talking about the Garden of Eden, right? And I know these stories because I was still raised with the religion, but I never like actually went in to like read it myself to like make my own conclusions. And this is kind of what I wanted to do. You know, the Garden of Eden, you know, he tells Adam and Eve that he's created the fruits for everybody, right? And then I got to the point where it talks about dominion, and I read that it wasn't actually dominion in the version of the Bible that we had at our house. It was rule. So God created us to rule over all of the kingdoms and the animals. And so he created the animals first, and then he created us, right? And I'm like, okay, well, I know like the Bible says about rulers, like a king ruling his kingdom has to be the servant for the kingdom, not like the other way around. And so when I brought that up to my mom and dad, you know, they were like, okay, you know, and it didn't even take that much longer. And you know, started learning more and having these conversations with my mom, and both of them are vegan now, right? And so, you know, when you look at the whole, you know, religion and all the religions, like this is what they teach. Right. Some reason all these people around the world think that God created animals for us, but when you actually look at the book, it's right on the first page almost, where it says that he actually created us for them, right? And to take care of them. And like knowing this, like on the street, if somebody ever asks me, like, you know, or tells me, like, oh, God created animals for us, like I just ask them, like, are you religious because of like you're actually religious, or are you just using this as an excuse to justify, right? And if anybody says they're actually, you know, religious and they care about it, now I've kind of removed these barriers because now I can enter into a conversation with them. And I don't want to enter like into a religious debate with people, but I'll ask them like, are you willing to be wrong that God created animals for us? Right? And most of the people have been like, sure, if you can prove me wrong, like, I'm a believer in God, so I want to know the truth. And then I point them to that one verse saying, like, God actually created us to have rulership over the animals. And you can go to this verse and it says that, Jesus said that, the rulers are supposed to be the servants and the slaves. And so, like, actually what the Bible is saying is that God created us to serve them, right? And he said, like, the good shepherd lays down his life for the sheep, right? So I've actually had so many people like thanking me for pointing that out to them. And it's actually fascinating. And like the revelation that people can get to when you're speaking to them in their language. And I think like even in the movement, I mean, I can't expect everybody to start learning all the religions and how to talk to these people, but I think even just from like how simple I just explained, like getting the barriers away, asking them if they're open to be wrong, pointing that out in the Bible. And then even if you just like, if you don't know how to say anything more from there, just like tell them to go home, watch like Christspiracy or something, like that can have a profound change on that person, right? So.
And I want to, shout out to the Vegan Catholic, vegancatholic.org. The one behind it is a Jesuit who is studying to become a priest. He's a vegan and pretty outspoken about it. He wants to see changes in the church, and he makes all of those arguments quite clearly on his website. So, Daniel Mascarenhas, I think his family name is. So, yes, definitely. We need to speak the language of the people we're trying to convince of adopting our views. One last thing about this. I don't have an authoritative trait to me. Like the idea of, trying to convince someone or using that language of influencing, convincing, or controlling the views of, I just don't like that. And sometimes it feels that way with veganism. Maybe this is just the way it is, and I should try to
No.
understand better my personality and work on that. But do you know what I'm getting at?
Like the thing is like to me, something I know to be true is you can't change people. Okay. So, people can change their minds, people can change their views, but they have to do it on their own, right? You can't change somebody. So, what people can do, what you can help people do is you can help them make alignments. You can help point out inconsistencies. You can help point out, essentially like that what they're doing is not actually in alignment with their views and morals they have, right? And pushing, you can push. I found like pushing is not the most effective, but I want to push, right? So how do I push without being pushy, right? That's kind of like this middle ground that we kind of have to enter into. And so what I've noticed is like, okay, if I'm pushing you, you're gonna push me back, right? But if I'm like, hey, let me grab your hand and come watch me while I do this thing, right? I can essentially guide people kind of like through the not through the process, but like what like it will look like if they follow me and start to like dismantle and break down why they believe the things they believe. Right. So, when I'm doing my activism, I'm taking that person on a journey, right? I mean, I don't really like the word journey because it's kind of like been used. I'm not taking them on a vegan journey, but I'm taking them on a journey. I want to use stories, I want to use imagery to help them make this connection that, there's a victim on the other side that is being oppressed because of their mindset that they're refusing to let go of, right? So, yeah, when it comes to, style and tone, like, I think there is, a more effective way than not. I think everybody has their own style. I don't want to say that there's a right or wrong way, but I think that we always can be growing, and we just have to realize, like, yeah, the more we try and not get people to, like, we're not trying to convince them, we're not trying to change them. This is within them already, but they're just not understanding the urgency and severity of the matter for them to actually make that change today. And a lot of people, I think, out there are really, like, internally, they want to be good people. They actually want to care. And so, bring that out of them is important. And that's something that you can't do intellectually. Or maybe you can with, like, certain people, but I'm talking majority. Like, this is more of, like, a feeling, emotional, kind of, like, heart-centered conversation. And if you find those people who actually are willing to have that heart-centered conversation, like, I'm not gonna say veganism about love, like, I'm talking about different things here. Those people are getting more receptive, they're gonna be more open, and it's a really easy and awesome conversation to have with them. And I don't know about you, but for me, when I made that connection, I went vegan on the spot. There was no way around it. And I thought I was going to die the next day because I didn't know what to eat. And that was completely fine with me, right? There's a whole bunch of other people out there who I know are just waiting for that message. And I meet them all the time. And, they're all vegan now. So.
Yes, I love that dose of optimism. What do you make, I need to balance that with the dose of negativity. So, what do you make of the ex-vegans? I feel like actually I think there are phenolytic studies showing that there are more people abandoning veganism than there are who stay vegan. And then they're just, everywhere on social media. It's incredible. Everyone needs to announce it publicly that they're no longer vegan and how veganism was bad for them. Like, if they came out of a cult, the latest one, I think, is who was his name? He's a
Russell Brand.
yes, this one. What do you make of that phenomenon? Why are people abandoning veganism? Not just the high profile one, but also everyday people.
So, this is where, like, I think as vegans, we really have to be critical, okay? And if you look at, like, the message that has been sent over the last, I don't know, however long. I've been vegan for almost 6 years. So, in the 6 years, majority of the 6 years, the messaging has been the same. Every activist is using the same messaging. And this is what it's leading to. It's leading to ex-vegans, right? And so the question is why? And I'm a data guy again. When I'm going through the data, I'm looking, okay, this person, is vegan and now he's not. So when you go back and you start looking at their videos and their content, right? The one big obvious thing is that this person's convinced that veganism is a diet, right? So now the question becomes, why does this person think that veganism is a diet, right? And so that's where I start to really analyze, and not start, not even, I didn't need to analyze at that point, but I started to actually make this, like, realization, right? All of the vegans, or most 99% of the vegans, when it comes to their activism, when it comes to their language, when it comes to what they're actually, like, fighting against most of the time, it's about the food aspect, right? And so if we're, especially if we're using these words like carnism and we're calling them meat eaters and corpse munchers and all these other things, right? If we're essentially, calling the opposite of vegan a meat eater, aren't we saying that veganism is a diet, right? And that was the big obvious one, right? And I mean, like, I don't want to say any names, but, like, you look at the biggest influencers, and I'm not going to bash them. I don't want to say that because I think that they are making a change. Maybe they're making people go back plant-based, maybe they're not going vegan to be more technical, but then maybe something along that path ends up making them go vegan, right? So, and I don't really want to go into the calculations of whether this is more harmful or not. I don't know. I'm not going to make that conclusion. But, when you have books like How to Argue Against a Meat Eater and Win, and how do you a lot of these books about veganism are all related about health and environment, right? I think like ultimately, like what you're doing is you're removing the justice from this movement, right? And when you remove the justice from the movement, that's how you dismantle a movement. And this is clear. And there, even if you go back in history, like this is something that has been done systemically to essentially silence people, to alienate people, right? I mean, just the easiest one I can go to right now that relates is vegetarianism, right? Vegetarianism was essentially like started by Pythagoras 500 years before Jesus was born, which was essentially just like an ethical movement specifically relating to food, right? But it was 100% about the ethics, right? And so it was very obvious. It was very simple. It was, perfectly relayed. And it did not include honey or eggs or milk or fish, apparently, or any of these other things. And it was just like clear, okay, this is a vegetarian and this is not, right? And there's a reason for it. And there was m so many people who were vegetarian and movements and, and everything. And so, you look at today, like when you hear the word vegetarian, like it doesn't really mean anything. Like, oh, those vegetarians, and some vegetarians eat meat, some don't. Some say that, some wear leather, some eat eggs, some don't, some drink milk, some don't. So it's completely lost its ethical foundation, right? And so how did that happen? That happened, I think, specifically by one, just like pushing all the ethical stuff to the side. And so why would they push all the ethical stuff to the side? And there was a vegetarian society, and essentially I think they were the ones responsible. But they started adding like this like words to the vegetarianism. So they started calling ovo-vegetarians and lacto-vegetarians and ovo-lacto-vegetarians. So back then, there wasn't vegetarian still meant that you ate eggs, but if you were ovo-vegetarian, you ate eggs. And so this started happening because, again, they were starting to view this like exploitation as, oh, this is nice exploitation, so then this is acceptable. And then the Vegetarian Society was a charity, I think, or a company. And so the decision was made, I'm 90% sure, I don't want to say this for sure, but like how I would think about this was that, okay, we want to make more money. So how do we get this movement to be more widely accepted? Or even if it's not about money, it's more, even if it's just about being more widely accepted. Well, if we like start being more compromising on our values, and we start being more kind of like just like nonchalant, I guess, then we'll have more people joining, right? And so that's what they did. So they completely abandoned the moral framework, the moral foundation, and said, okay, yeah, if you eat eggs and not meat, then you're vegetarian. Oh, if you're eating milk and cheese, like, okay, yeah, you could be a vegetarian too. Like, come join us. Like, right now you have all these vegetarians. The nobody even really knows that the real meaning of vegetarian was just like somebody who actually doesn't eat any animals or any products or anything like that, right? And now you have vegetarianism, which people don't even know. Like, some vegetarians eat steak sometimes too. Like, and so when you want to like break apart of a movement, that's how you do it. You remove the moral foundation. And I think that's what is missing and was missing with all these ex-vegans is that real understanding of what veganism is, what its objective is. And, they probably were just victim to some kind of trend. It's interesting that all of them are like influencers. So, like, they're probably just trying to exploit the trends on social media and help them grow. And then they got that, and now it's not trending on social media, and it's trending in the opposite direction. So they're going in this opposite direction. And it's always about kind of like getting, the followers of certain groups and attracting them and, just these shady ways. And I mean, I don't really know anyone personally who was a big activist like that went vegan. I know I've heard some stories of certain people. And I think there's other reasons too, like when it comes to partners, I think is a big one. I do know a couple of friends and some people around me who have not been or have gone ex-vegan because of their partner and pressure, but that comes from, like, I think also an insecurity inside where, you know, they're so desperate to be with somebody that that person isn't vegan and may not accept them if they aren't. So they're just willing to, like, completely abandon that for this, like, relationship. And that probably makes even less sense to me. But yeah, I think it all just kind of comes back to that, like, they don't have the real foundation. And so that kind of leads me into saying, like, as activists, it's important for us to recognize that, and even more important to change our language because of that.
This is deeply interesting. I see an alternative timeline where veganism is not a thing, where we would be calling ourselves simply vegetarian. Don't you agree with that?
Well, like there's like, you know, there's no problem with the original foundation of vegetarianism, right? And like I think like a lot of people actually right now are doing vegetarian outreach, not vegan outreach. And I don't think there is a problem with that at all either. If they're doing vegetarian outreach from an ethical perspective, like that does dismantle the biggest industry that's exploiting animals. But I don't want to say that it is vegan activism because vegan activism is different. And, you know, so like in that alternate timeline, if everybody was vegetarian, right? Like, and also like when you hear of like people like Einstein was vegetarian and Tesla was vegetarian and like all these people were vegetarian, but vegetarian did not mean eating eggs and milk and all that stuff. So you also have all these people convinced that all these, you know, greats and intellectual thinkers and whatever were just the type of vegetarians that you have running around today. So, I mean, if we had a world where all those people were vegetarian in that sense, yeah, I think that would be amazing. And plus, like from there, you don't have all of these byproducts that are being used in everything else. And so, but ultimately, like I also talk about this a little bit too. Like for me, veganism isn't necessarily the goal, right? Vegetarianism wouldn't be the goal, right? I think these are just steps into actually building a utopian kind of world where everybody is thriving, everybody is kind of living to their fullest and in harmony with everyone around them, with compassion, with care, and with love. Like that is the ultimate goal, right? Veganism to me is just a baseline, right? It's like the baseline level of respect. And there is like a hierarchy. And so, like, you know, respect is at the very bottom of like what everybody deserves and is decent, right? And so that's a shitty goal, if you ask me. Like, I don't think we should all as humans strive to be just the basic level of decent, right? We should strive to be more. And so veganism, vegetarianism, and you know, whatever you want to call it, helps lay the foundation for that to exist. Because as long as we view animals as objects and commodities and resources, we're never going to be able to live in that society that actually represents the values that it says that it upholds.
Definitely and beautifully said. Yes. Yeah, what I meant is, you know, the definition of vegetarianism could have evolved to be to become veganism. And, you know, this is a great segue to talking about the history of veganism. And let me share this story. Maybe I should not say this, but I will tell it, tell this story anyway. I wanted to do an episode on the history of veganism, and I thought, okay, well, let's contact the Vegan Society. They're, you know, well positioned to pr introduce me to someone who knows the history of their organization, of their founding members. And I had so much trouble doing that. Like, they couldn't find anyone, and then they said, What about our head of communication? Would that make a good guest for talking about the history of the vegan society? And I thought, this is weird. Like, what's happening? Like, you should have like someone, a historian. I don't know. Like, maybe even have a project to fund a museum about veganism. Like, establish that history and make it core to your mission. Or maybe I'm reading too much into that anecdote. So do you think
I think I know what you're thinking.
do you think there is a lack of education into the history of veganism? So you mentioned Leslie Cross. Who is that? And is it important to know people like him? The people who
I,
laid
you
the
know,
foundation of veganism.
before I learned about who he is and his writings, I would have said no, the history doesn't matter, right? And I would have been so wrong, because once you understand who Leslie Cross is, once you read his writings and once you really understand them, and when you look at the current state of the world, the current state of the vegan movement, and just the reflection of what society thinks veganism is, it's clear that we need to go back there, right? I can kind of maybe get a little bit conspiracy. I don't think I want to. We don't need to. But like, when the vegan society, after, I think part of the history that it is known is that so in 1944, Donald Watson founded the Vegan Society with a couple other people. And then from there, there was a definition that was defined, and it was something to do with all life. And then they had to revisit it. And then it took them 7 years. Leslie Cross was one of the influential people who was essentially tasked with defining, and he was the one who wrote all of the writings. If you haven't read the writings, you have to. It starts off with like Man and Nature, I think, was the first one. I actually have a link where I put like a good directory of all of the writings. So if you want that, I can send it to you. And then it goes into like the most important ones, I think, are Veganism Defined, The Surge of Freedom, The Vegan Story. Like, those perfectly paint the message, right? And so, that definition held in 1951 when they defined it and they released it. I'll say it again because it's important. It's the doctrine that man should live without exploiting animal, right? And this is like words from the 40s, so you don't have to use those words. Something along the lines of like, it's the ethical principle that humans should live without exploiting animals, right? And so whatever, way you want to represent that, like, in modern language, like, I think, it's fair to do. So, and then he says again, because he under like, imagine taking 7 years to think up all of this stuff. Like, I haven't even been vegan for 7 years and I'm already here. So the amount of effort that they had to go into to writing all of this documentation, to like go argue in every direction, how can we rip this apart more? How and So they didn't also just use the word exploitation as it was found in the dictionary. They had to write their own more specific definition for it and other words so that people understand fully what they were saying, right? So this is how much thought that they put into this work, right? And as vegans, if we're just going to dismiss this and just think, oh, like Leslie Cross is a, is irrelevant, doesn't matter, how could we say that, we are not egotistical or that we actually care about the animals if we're and call ourselves vegans if we don't know this, right? When I first heard about Leslie Cross, I was actually just it was through one of the writings, The Surge of Freedom, and when I was reading this, like everything just started like making sense to me, right? I didn't need to argue it. I didn't need to refute it. It all just kind of like stuck. And the way my mind works, I started realizing like, oh man, like this is why I'm burning out. This is why I'm going into these debates that I don't need to go into. Like, I don't know, I'm even representing veganism properly, and I'm entertaining things that, like, I don't need to be entertaining. Like, why am I doing this, right? And the first time, the very first time I was, I got a DM from this anti-vegan troll, online, and and I've gotten many of these messages, and I've responded the same way to almost all of them. And I'll respond something like, like, oh, I get the block of text, like, oh, like, sorry, I don't want to, answer. You got this straight from the anti-vegan playbook or something, like, and they're like, oh, blah, blah. And some of them will say, like, no, I actually want to know what your response is, and blah, blah. And and so I go back forth. I see, okay, maybe this person is a little bit open-minded, and I'll ask him one question. It's like, before we start our conversation, you have to agree with me that you understand that the definition of veganism is that humans should live without exploiting animals, right? And the amount of people that are like, oh, that's what veganism means? Oh, and like, they're actually smart enough to understand that their arguments aren't valid arguments against that definition. And when I have like these people who are like literally like sending me these copy paste, like you're saying, it all comes to the same place, and able to realize themselves that their arguments don't actually hold up, right? That also means that like all of the excuses, the way that we're answering them, right, is probably the reason that these ex other excuses are coming up in the first place, right? So it's important that we read Leslie Cross, because then we'll understand the foundation. We'll understand what he actually like was thinking when he wrote this definition, and everything is covered, and he talks about it all, right? And so, somewhere like I think 10 years later, roughly now, my timelines are getting a little bit skewed. The Vegan Society went from a it was a nonprofit, not for profit, and then it became a charity. So when it became a charity, now there was different dynamics involved, and I think there must have been some internal, like, I don't know where to find this history too, like, I don't. And then I know in the 1970s, after Leslie Cross passed away, I think it was almost like right away. I don't think these are related, maybe just more coincidence, but they actually became a corporation. So now the Vegan Society is a for-profit organization, right? And that just makes me question, like, okay, so do you still uphold the same values as the original founders of the foundation, right? And when you find out it's a corporation now, they're actively profiting. I don't know how, like, my assumption is like from the labels, like people have to pay to put the labels, and I don't know how much they're paying. And to sign up to be a part of the Vegan Society, there's like a yearly fee, and so I don't know how many people are signed up. And it's interesting because around that time too was when they started adding the environment and health to the definition. So they changed the definition, right? And why would they do that? So that it could be more widely accepted, so that they can be, again, kind of like the vegetarian movement adding eggs and dairy. And now you have this vegan movement compromising on their values and just completely ignoring the victims, and now including health and environment, right? So this is why I think, everybody should go and research who Leslie Cross is. At least read those three writings, The Vegan Story, Veganism Defined, and Surge of Freedom. And, if you don't understand it, read it again. And once it clicks for you, everything will make sense. Everything will make sense of why we're here, why the movement is in the state that it's in, why people are going back to not being vegan, and all these other things. And something actually I could recommend to you, if you could, or if you can manage somehow, Leslie Cross's son is still alive. And I think he's pretty old right now. But he did do a podcast with somebody. I don't remember who it was. And he was telling his story. And so he's been vegan since he was born. And he talks about like how, he grew up being vegan and what it was like back then. And if anybody is to know the history, it would be him. And that would be your guy. And so, I don't know what kind of, things you gotta throw out to get that to happen. But maybe you could reach out some way you can find him. But I would be super excited to watch that.
That's a challenge, and
Perfect.
I'm ready to accept the challenge. Thank you for the
Perfect.
suggestion. And this is
Yeah.
newsbreaking for me.
Yeah.
I did not know that the Vegan Society was a for-profit.
Yeah.
I
It's
was
not hidden either. Like it's yeah, you can find that. It's public
still
domain, so.
I was under the assumption that it was a non-profit since, it's an association. It's and yeah, I was going to ask you about that amendment to the definition of veganism.
Yeah.
So, if you want the official definition of veganism, your instinct will be to go and look at the definition of the Vegan Society.
Yeah.
And there you find that veganism is also for the environment and for your health and not at all something
Yeah.
that is focused.
Not to mention, like, I have never asked a vegan to perfectly recite that definition and can do it, right? So even if the definition is complex, how the heck are we supposed to simplify what the movement is? Like, this is a very simple movement. This is about justice, like stop exploiting animals. It's not complex, right? But our definition is so complex, and it leaves so much space for, like, where do you draw the line for this? What is possible and practicable, and what is defined as, cruelty or exploitation? And why is this about, like, new food alternatives and stuff, and, like, blah blah blah. Like, I mean, and that's why, it's, to me, like, I don't know, it doesn't add up. 1 + 1 = 2. But here, they're not adding up, right? And so I don't want to make any conclusions. I don't know if the Vegan Society is compromised or not. I don't want to say that. But I'm asking these questions, and I still don't have all the answers, so.
Well, maybe I could share a piece of information that might give some answers. I was reading a book about philanthropy, so since this is my day job, fundraising. And I was reading about the official classification of social causes in the philanthropic world. And this is done by John Hopkins. I don't know which research center or department. Exactly, and the UN. And they make this official classification, and animal protection is under the environment. There is a group, they call it Group 7, that is about social justice, about rights, human rights, political causes. It's not there. Animal protection is really classified as an environmental cause. So, if you're a funder and you're trying to fund, a nonprofit dedicated to saving animals, you're thinking about them as an environmental cause. So maybe this is why, so many animal protection organizations abandon the ethical argument and just focus on the environment.
I mean, that makes more sense. That's more of a closer to 1 + 1 = 2 than, what we currently have. So that I could see a correlation there. Because, I mean, you're now trying to, get more money, get more funding, more donors. I mean, even when you look at, AV, I think the story is pretty known, right? When they lost their funding, it was related to an issue like this, right? And so it was right around the time where they started removing health and environment from the messaging, upon all their realizations. And one thing leads to another. We don't have to get down that story, but now they've lost their funding, and they're the only organization, I don't know, only, but one of the only, that focus purely and solely on the animals. And it's such a tragedy to see that, like, when an organization sticks to their values, then they lose their funding because of that. It's sad.
Yeah, and there's also a pull to talk about health and the environment. You know, my podcast is exclusively about the ethical aspect of veganism. But then again, you know, I find myself, you know, with vegans contacting me or recommending guests that are in the health space or the environmental space. And yeah, I feel it. I feel that pressure of, you know, talk about something else. And yeah, definitely.
Yeah, I mean, we have so many already talking about health and environments and everything, right? And like, it's flooded. We need more of these conversations, and we need to inspire activists to become more active, right? And I think this is how we do it, just by showing people how simple this is, right? If you haven't seen the new AV flow chart, and you're listening to this and you haven't seen it, like, you must go look at it. I was one of the people involved in actually coming up with this new flow chart, and I was tasked with actually creating the design for it. So, and I'm going to be, I did a speech in the summer that I'm uploading soon, on just like teaching people how to be effective on the street with this type of outreach. So it's shifted from like essentially just being questions, like 9 questions, to being 9 principles behind the question and explaining how to go through the conversation in flow that way. And then there's an example of a certain question that you can apply to that principle, so that we're able to help teach people even more behind the scenes why we came up with the questions, right? And we following this protocol, or this flow chart, makes this process so simple. Right? Anybody can do it. And it needs to be that simple so that we can actually get out there, be effective. And, I think that's our responsibility too, as much as it is anything else. So, keep focusing on the activism. I think as the movement grows and as people start to see the value here, I think that, this platform is going to be awesome.
And as a reminder, all of what we talked about will be in the episode's notes. So links to the flow chart and to readings from Leslie Cross, all of that. So I will also mention it in the introduction. But yeah. So Ben, did you want to add something before we stop the recording?
Oh man, there's always so much to talk about. So I think, like, going back to, AI, which is gonna be, think, the main thing I wanted to, or we wanted to talk about. I mean, I'm always looking for more people to help me with testing and pushing the edges of what the AI is capable of and how it's answering. And so if anybody out there is willing to work with me and help build some cool tools. Some of the other tools that I'm working on are, I've essentially tried to recreate Leslie Cross as a GPT, so you can actually like talk to him. So I've been gathering all this information, and you can get into his brain, and I've been talking to him through that, which has been pretty cool. And I'm building an outreach helper, so essentially one that's the opposite. So you essentially have to pretend you're the troll and see if you can go through this outreach. So like, it has the knowledge of the AV flow chart, and it kind of takes you through that. And so if you're wanting to learn about actually doing outreach on the street, this is a good tool that'll be out there. And I'm just, always looking for ideas and looking for people to collaborate with and get this in front of people, because this has been life-changing for me, and this is what has been my passion side project over the winter here in Canada. So just empowering activists, making this simple, and just inspiring them to like want to do activism, whether it's online or in person, or however you want to do it, I think There is an opportunity for us to be way more effective now by, harnessing the intellectual capacity of AI and applying that to our outreach.
I would love to have Leslie Cross as a special guest, AI Leslie Cross on the show.
Yo, that's a good idea, actually.
Would be fun,
That's pretty.
to have him be voiced by some English gentleman somewhere. By the
Yeah.
way, do I see a hockey stick behind you?
Yeah. Those are
That's
my
so
hockey sticks.
typically Canadian.
Yeah, I grew up playing hockey since I was 6 years old, and it's my passion. So and I got my like hat. I'm a Colorado Avalanche fan. I don't know if you can see that.
Nice. So Ben, thank you so much. I'm looking forward to all of those AI, getting being available. And thank you so much for your work and for your great insight. I am so happy I took the initiative of inviting you on the show. We had such a pleasant conversation, and of course, you're welcome to come back anytime.
Yeah, this was great. A great conversation. I think we need to have more of these conversations.
Thank you, everyone, for listening. I kindly invite you to share this podcast with the vegans you know. Let's encourage more people to take action. Again, thank you so much for caring, and I will see you next Tuesday for a new episode.